As a business leader, who do you turn to when navigating the complexities of scaling a business? Having someone who's been there before can make all the difference in the world. And that is exactly what today's episode is about. Our guest is someone who can share why having the right guidance can help accelerate the growth of your business and also, very important, help you avoid common pitfalls. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get ahead and stay ahead of the game. And they know in order to do so, you always have to be constantly learning because great leaders aren't born or made, they're always in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby. I'm the CEO of Learn It and a two-time best-selling author. And I'm excited for our guest today. His name is Ben Johnson. Ben is a serial entrepreneur. He has a wide range of being both a board-level advisor and founder, but also an in-depth understanding of how things work. Throughout his 20-plus years, he's been both a board-level advisor and founder, but also has in-depth knowledge of what it takes to run great teams in today's day and age. Ben is the CEO and founder of Particle 41, a dev firm that's founded by industry veterans that aims to help companies accelerate their initiatives through software development, DevOps, and data science. In today's episode, we're going to cover how to leverage technology to scale your business. We also talk a lot about why it's so important to have somebody you can turn to. In Ben's case, being a CTO advisor and the value that he brings to his customers. Ben also shares lessons and examples from his successful exits. This is an episode you're not going to want to miss. So let's jump right into our conversation with Ben Johnson. You've started and sold several businesses. Can you walk us through your entrepreneurship journey?
Yeah, so I'll go all the way back. I had a paper out when I was 13 years old. And so entrepreneurship has really been analogous to freedom for me. The paper out gave me freedom to wear Nike Airs into school and go get a Nintendo Entertainment System. So I'm dating myself, obviously. But entrepreneurship and freedom have been really close knit. And so, I did a travel company, a travel media company, a media company in the finance space, and then really started a lot of consulting. And then a couple of ventures I've done lately. One is legal tech, and then another is a SaaS product for the marine services industry. So really been just noticing needs, and really, I love partnering with folks that know their space, have great ideas, and understand how to work with investors. And I really join them, partner with them as the technical co-founder. And so, all those ventures have kind of fit that pattern of being a technical co-founder with somebody who's hardworking and has great ideas.
So that's interesting. So can you share some examples of how, when you're looking at these founders or individuals to work with, what are some of the attributes, I guess, you look at to decide if you think it would be a good fit for somebody to work with?
Kind of first and foremost, a strong mindset, a good work ethic, and knowing their industry. And then it's always a bonus if they know how to if they know how to like talk the investor module, right? I'd call it the investor module. It's like they understand the vocabulary of investment. And so now that's something I bring to the table. But in the early days, I didn't have that. So I wanted somebody else who understood how to do the fundraising. But yeah, I just look for that kind of the understanding of the problem and the, being willing to grind and learn. That appreciation for learning is super huge. And so it's like five things that I really enjoy finding in a partner or a co-founder. And I think that summarizes them.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I have a lot of buddies in the VC world. And a lot of times what they talk about is, in a lot of cases, it's more about the founders and the C-level team than it is even about the product, because that could shift over time. So they want to see, are these founders, are they resilient? Are they curious? Are they hardworking? Are they reliable? So I think it's really important. And I think you also started a bounce house, right? Do you still have that?
I do, yeah.
How's that business?
Hey, my wife calls me a hobbypreneur, right? I don't have hobbies. I have these little side hustles. And so, yeah, I learned that buying a bounce house is pretty attainable. They cost about $2,000. And my daughter's birthday was coming up. And so I know, hey, there's nothing more she'd like than to have a bounce house. But what if I could pull the bounce house out just for a week well done, right? So I looked at it and they're actually pretty attainable. So yeah, I threw up a Facebook page, a little Calendly to Stripe integration. And so yeah, you can go on Facebook if you're in my area and you can rent a bounce house. And then my older teenage sons will deliver it to you and you give them a little delivery fee and then they'll pick it up for you a few hours later. So yeah, we've paid for the bounce house. We got a boy, kind of a boy colored one and a girl colored one. And not too many boys want a pink and purple bounce house. So we got one of each. And I think we're pretty close to breaking even on the bounce houses. So we've gotten to use bounce houses for free. And people from our church and from our local community, they just say, hey, can we borrow the bounce house?
Well, that's great. You know, I got a 3-year-old son and I'd like to stick him in the bounce house all day to get that energy out, Ben.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, so maybe I'll take it up out here. But let's talk about some of the other companies you started. I know you started an online training company that I think you, not training, sorry, online travel company that you grew to about $70 million, I believe. And also an organization or a company that you sold to LegalZoom, right?
Yeah. So the travel company was way back in the day. That was in 2001. You know, we kind of starting that. So it was before Orbitz, before Southwest went to web only fares. But the initial intention was a brick and mortar travel agency needed to start selling online. And I think, you know, Travelocity and Expedia were around, but not much big online players in the space. And where we really had a niche was in domestic to foreign. So like New York to London was an amazing rate for us. We had really good negotiated rates there. But this was pre-cloud, and we were in Odessa, Texas, of all places. And so we built a data center in Odessa, Texas. We kind of ran everything from it. Of course, later on, once we had proved some success, we moved to Dallas data center, saved a bunch of money. But it was just a really awesome time where we essentially built the internet, right? We had to do everything ourselves. We didn't have a lot of vendors to choose from. So some of the things we needed the most had to be kind of in-housed. It's been amazing to see how now the barrier has really reduced and you need compute resources. You just go to Amazon Web Services or Microsoft Azure or any of these cloud-based hosting products and you get everything you'd ever wanted. But in the early 2000s, you had to figure that stuff out on your own.
No, I mean, it's crazy how things have evolved over time, you know, what used to be like to now. When it came to these businesses you started, was it something where like you came across a challenge yourself and you're like, hey, I want to get involved in that. There's got to be a better way to do it. Or what was your thought process on that?
So a little bit of each, you know, a little bit of both. Like I don't want to choose my career path based on just being opportunistic. Like, hey, you're going to give me a job. I'd rather be a consultant in that space. Like you have a skill or a need. I'd rather be a consultant to go solve that. But when I really get connected with it's not entrepreneurial, it's intrapreneurial. When I really understand the mission and the vision and the core values and what we're trying to accomplish, I just get really connected to that. And so with the travel company, we were really changing the way people access travel. So instead of walking into a travel agency, like people actually did that, right? They went to the travel agency to book their trip.
Old school.
And then, or they called and spent like 30, 40 minutes on the phone to get everything nailed down. And so to be able to go online and just punch it in, and it's just amazing the depth of things that we had to figure out. And it wasn't just airline tickets, it was car rentals and hotel rooms, and just to see all of that, it was a lot of really fun work. And so I get connected to that mission.
And so what are some challenges that you experienced along the way, either at the travel company or at the legal company?
Yeah. I mean, challenges, there's always challenges in kind of bringing everyone together around the mission. Challenges seem like a negative. I find challenges really fun.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I mean, just getting your audience to find you and know you, trust you. This is the most important challenge, like the dialing in the customer experience and figuring out what they want and what they need. A lot of problems are education based. In legal services, we really needed to educate folks. So we needed to have a really clear problem statement. Like, you are having to learn all 50 jurisdictions in order to provide legal services. Like, some lawyers are local, they only do business in one state. But pretty quickly, even a business who's headquartered in where I am, Texas, like a small roofing company might do work in Louisiana, Arkansas, New Mexico. Like, they may travel where the storms have impacted and where the roofs are damaged. So now they have to form a business in all of those states where they hire people, where they need insurance, and then they have to maintain that compliance. And so this is something that every business needs, but they don't know they need it. And so I find some of the most challenging problems are around educating your audience. And so what we found works really well is just saying, hey, you have this problem, and kind of nailing that problem statement, and we have the solution, and trying to do that as succinctly as possible, even with something as unsexy as legal services.
No, absolutely. And so as far as a legal company, at some point you decided you wanted to sell, right? So what brought it to that point?
So in all candor, it was very strategic for my partner and I. We started this business in 2015 because we saw a gap between the typical formation company and then the large players that were helping big businesses with their compliance. We just saw this mid-market gap. And so we created the tools to serve that mid-market gap. And then it was very clear that product was a fit for LegalZoom. And so it was really very targeted. I want to say we knew everything that was going to happen. Like, we totally planned to sell to LegalZoom. And that would only be about 50% true. But our intention from the beginning was to build a really great tool, but to combine forces with one of the industry leaders, either the one that was serving the high up enterprise customers or the one that was forming the startup businesses. And we just found a really nice home with LegalZoom. And, I really enjoyed the acquisition experience and all the people that I got to meet there and the amazing things that they were doing. We had kind of started at Legal Inc., but they were doing at a much larger scale.
I ask because a lot of our listeners are curious about the acquisition process and how that works. You know, they have this business and they're considering selling. You said you enjoyed it. Can you go a little deeper on that and maybe some advice that you'd give to entrepreneurs who have this business they started and are considering selling?
Yeah. Know your math. How is your business evaluated? And I love talking to people about this. So a lot of folks have very specific things going on. Know valuation math, understand what multiples are, and just kind of have some idea, because the more direct you can be in the acquisition process, the better off you'll be. So to be able to know what a good expectation is for your business and like how to value it. But also, like, ask all those questions up front. And a lot of times these are opportunities to become a valued employee, a senior employee at a new company. And so you have to kind of know that. Like, once the sale happens, you're an employee, you're not an entrepreneur anymore. So you can be very entrepreneurial about it. You can still own your P&L oftentimes, like we did for the first couple of years. But just, kind of all bets are off. So you do lose control, but it can still be an amazing relationship. So you have to enjoy building relationships. You can't, you know, so it's just a really cool give and take experience. But even like selling to private equity, you can be part of that private equity family and you can build relationships with your new owners. And then they could have an acquisition strategy to help you grow. There's just all kinds of situations that, you know, can be really positive. But you also have to ask those questions like, hey, what is the, you know, what's the intention here? And, you know, what other things are in your portfolio? How are we going to fit? And what are we going to go do together and kind of really know what the 3 to 5 year plan is and maybe even what the, you know, first 30, 60, 90 day goals are and then what the first year goals are. But do that planning up front so that you have a roadmap and a layout of what you might want to do together. And then know your math, like know how to value your company in a fair market price way.
No, I think that's great. It's like what I hear you saying is it's important to be proactive and understand your situation going into it. Through those transactions, did you ever have a feeling of like remorse that you sold and had to put your ego aside to then become an employee, or was that an easy transition for you?
No, I think for me, it was an easy transition because I knew all the factors that had kind of fit together, and I probably can't share all of them, but just my founder's, this was his first startup, you know, and just what he needed as a person, what was happening to us in the market, and how different partnerships were working out, like really all the pieces fell into place where that was the best step forward. And I think to second guess those things just creates anxiety, right? When you've already, you know, you've seen how the chess piece looks and you know, okay, this is my next move. It really doesn't serve you well to go, oh, I wish I'd moved this other way. And then, you know, go through the mental angst of trying to figure out how that would have changed all the other pieces on the board. I think, you know, a lot of times as owner, business owners or entrepreneurs, you just got to make a move and see what happens next. And that second guessing doesn't help.
No, I think that that's great. I have a lot of friends or people I know who they go through that transition and they sell and then they get frustrated and they, you know, they kind of second guess their moves and everything. And it's like, hey, why deal with all that stress? You know, refocus it into something positive and move forward. Because, you know, I mean, a lot of times it's a win that they did and sometimes you just have to keep going. You're a big fan. We were talking about it a second ago about, you know, goal setting and setting goals. You started off as a big fan of OKRs. I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit, but you're also, you're transitioning into something else now, right? A new mindset around goal setting.
Yeah. Before we go to that, I would love to come back to what you're saying. There's a tool that I've recently learned around some of those most challenging times, right? Like, you know, let's say you do sell or you make a big move and then things aren't working out as you've expected. So you feel off, right? Something, you feel off. This tool really can be used for anybody, like in any situation where you just don't feel like things are right. And so what we kind of practice is this idea of, okay, what emotion am I feeling? What do I believe about this situation? Is that belief 100% true? And is there something else that I could replace that belief with? Because things are happening, like we sell to private equity, and now we have these different, you know, bean counter relationships, right? And we go from like having full control and be able to say like, oh, my finances are a little tight, but I'm not going to worry about that right now, right? But then we sell to like a private equity investor and like, oh, your finances are a little tight. This is a huge issue. And we'd love for them to go back to like things to go back to the way they were with more freedom. But we're in a new world now, right? So we have a choice at that point, like, okay, that's frustrating me that they're kind of interrogating some of those financial decisions that I've made. But what I've really been focused on is that I interpret those meanings, right? I give that situation, that extra interrogation or the feedback from a teammate, I give that the meaning. And I may have given it a meaning. One of my mentors says, if you can't take a picture of it, then it doesn't really exist. And so these things are happening to us. We're interpreting the meaning. We're elevating and we're feeling like junk because of the meaning that we gave the situation. And so this tool called the Power Reframe, I feel, is super valuable to say, okay, well, what meaning have I given this situation? And is that meaning serving me well? And then I can replace that meaning with one that's better. Like, you know what? It's really great that I don't have to interrogate my books. I can go solve my situation. And I know that if anything were not to wash out, my capital partner would catch me on it and hold me accountable. And really, in the end, they're just trying to make sure that I do what I say I'm going to do. And so reframing that and finding out like that this capital partner is a person and he likes the Jets, we'll forgive him for that. But, you know, like he's a person and he has challenges and I can like learn to enjoy my relationship with him, or I can treat him like an object of annoyance. And so, yeah, the Power Reframe has been really helpful in just helping me. And I do it with some journaling, but you can go through extremely difficult times if you're not making those times worse by picking up all these extra meanings and meanings that really probably aren't true. And you can change it to a meaning that serves you better. So I thought I'd just share that because what I'm finding is that there are a lot of horror stories with going through an acquisition or getting to the next stage in your business or hiring a difficult employee or whatever it is. And we oftentimes amplify those situations and make them worse rather than taking the time to make sure that we're interpreting the situation properly.
No, let's stay here for a minute. I love that because a lot of times, Ben, if you think about it, whether it's yourself or your employees, or, you know, this goes personally too, you amplify the problem in your head and you take it to places that it really doesn't need to go. And what I'm hearing you say too is maybe take control of the way you want to look at it and reframe it, which I think is awesome. And it's also kind of like getting away from, wouldn't you say, a victim mentality?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, we have an internal framework called victim versus creator, right? And if I'm going to be a victim, then I can't create. I'm just in this victim mode and I get stuck there. And so, yeah, we really talk a lot about victim versus creator. What's a pattern of taking responsibility so I can go create something from maybe what is a negative situation? You know, I had a client schedule a meeting. My Calendly link, I give it out to every, you know, just very freely, my Calendly link. And I'm like, hey, you know, here's my Calendly link, book time with me anytime. And so it's like Monday and I see them book something for Tuesday. And I immediately jump to this kind of like self-consciousness, like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble. This is going to be a negative conversation. They're going to complain. And I'm like, I'm kind of worried about it, or I'm kind of sitting there for a little bit. And I'm like, is that really true? Do I know for 100, am I 100% sure that they've booked this meeting to complain? And then why would I even be worried about them complaining? We're doing a great job. The team is crushing it. So I was able to journal for a few minutes, and rather than worry about that for, you know, what would have been a 24-hour cycle, it's like, what's a better belief? And what I came back with was, I bet they just need help. There's something that they need help with on this call. And so I entered that call saying like, how can I help you? What's going on? And you know what? They needed help. My reframed meaning was actually more true. And even when the conversation went to like some maybe niggles that they were having, I didn't overreact to those niggles. I didn't get defensive. I was able to help them. And had I sat in that, and it would have built into something, I don't know how I would have showed up.
Coming into that call where you were less defensive because you thought, hey, maybe they just need help, did that help you on the call when the niggles came up as far as not getting defensive even more in that situation?
Oh, totally. Because the whole frame in which I was approaching that is, let me help you. And so when they did bring up some niggles, I was to say, well, hey, what might help is for you to do these things, or for maybe the team just needs to communicate a little bit more. And it was so much easier than the the anticipation of the meeting would have been way worse than the meeting, and the anticipation would have caused me to show up in the wrong way. So just by reframing that and spending a few minutes journaling, and I was able to be more productive throughout my day because I didn't have this you know,
cloud kind of hanging feeling. Over your head.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
And how did that particular situation end? How did that call end?
Oh, it was great. I mean, they just needed help. In fact, I feel like that particular client just oftentimes wants to spend some extra time to give me an update on their progress on their end. I'm a CTO advisor for them, so they just want to kind of keep me up to speed on conversations that they're having, figure out when I need to be included. And so it was the beginning of a really great partnership. Really, you know, there's kind of two tracks now. There's the CTO advisory track and there's the separate work track. And in those calls, they're very much mentally separated from the two don't often clash. And so had I come into that call kind of assuming that they were going to clash, I might have actually caused that outcome.
And I want to get to the CTO advisor and Particle 41 in a second. But I am fortunate. I get to interview a lot of great founders, CEOs, senior leaders. And one thing that's almost like a common thread is not having a victim mentality and taking ownership and being accountable. But you know, as well as I know, there are so many people out there who have a victim mentality. How do we help individuals who, whether they realize it or not, get out of that mentality and get into more of, I don't want to know if it's called an abundance mindset or just being open to looking at things and reframing them like we talked about?
Yeah. So I think the way that I usually approach that is I don't really want to go through life trying to change people. I want to have an open-handed grip on life. And so since I can't change a person's mindset, what I can do is I can show up different. And so if I show up free, if I show up taking responsibility, I show up not taking the victim route, not blaming others, then I think that will have impact. And I can ask questions. I can say, okay, you know, it's all there. When those friends, those family members say, well, you know, it's this and that, I can ask them, is that really true? I can say, is that really true? You know, I have so many personal examples of this just with relatives and family members where, you know, and we can all do it. It's all something that that may happen on a given situation or a given circumstance. And so we can call them up, I say, not call them out, but call them up to a different way of thinking. But we really can't change a person. And a lot of times a tendency to be a victim comes from the aim of survival, right? We're just aiming to survive. And people who've gone through pretty significant trauma in their childhood may choose a survival aim. Like, all I need to do is make it through. And a lot of times just trying to make it through will lead us to choose a victim mentality, because all we got to do is make it through. And so, you know, if I went this direction and something happened to me, well, that was their fault, so I'm just going to stay in my comfort zone. And so that may be a very difficult thing for you to change in a family member or in a business partner. But I think if we show up different, we can open up space for those conversations.
I like that. What I hear you saying is basically kind of model the behavior to set an example for them, because you can't change people, right? So, and sometimes it's hard to argue with people who are victims because they're not gonna buy it anyways. But if you could at least show up and you know, go about your approach the way that you want to go about it, and hopefully they can learn from you, then that's the best you can do.
Yeah, one of the leadership books that that all of our leaders read is The Leadership and Self-Deception. And in that book, they talk about being in the box, versus being out of the box and seeing people as people rather than in the box, you see people as objects. And so a lot of times there's also something going on where we see folks, employees or business peers, we really see them as objects of performance, people who get a particular, that really just almost like robots that get a particular role and responsibility completed. But I think once we start seeing people as people and, you know, understand that they have challenges, difficulties, mindsets of their own, and we're willing to engage them at that level, you know, there's such a difference between somebody inside the box saying, hey, don't let me down again, and somebody outside the box that who really cares for me saying, hey, you know, don't let me down again. I care about you, but I can't have you let me down. Like you can't miss the mark again. There's like such a start, like such a difference between the same words being said by somebody who, you know, cares for you as a person versus those same words by somebody who just cares about your performance.
And I think that's super important, especially for our listeners out there. I want you to think about situations where you're managing people and you need the task or responsibility to get done, and maybe you're stressed and you just look at them as an object to get work done and missing out on them as a person. Ben, can you share an example or give a tip to how somebody can recalibrate that and maybe be a little bit more mindful of their team members?
Being curious rather than being giving advice or making assumptions. So I was with a group of men the other day, and we were having breakfast together, and there was, you know, coffee, and the coffee was super strong. And we were all kind of joking around about the strength of the coffee. And there's no creamer in sight, but we continued on for maybe 10-15 minutes, you know, just complaining about the strength of the coffee. Then one of the guys came in and he said, is it possible that there's creamer somewhere? Like, is that possible? So he didn't approach it like, what, no creamer? You know, like it's snobby or complaining, but he just approached it like, is it possible? And the facility where we were meeting at said, oh yeah, I forgot to get that out of the refrigerator. But we had sat there for like 10 or 15, and something that stupid, right? Just creamer, no creamer. But was an example how we just didn't ask for what we needed, right? We didn't, and most people don't ask for what they need. And so a lot of times a little extra curiosity just to say, hey, is there a reason why you were 20 minutes late today? Are you doing okay? And just approaching it with curiosity rather than accusation or, you know, just immediately rushing. That curiosity is how you express that you're not in the box, that you do care about people. So I think the tip I would say is start with curiosity.
And I'm sure curiosity has played a huge part in your life as an entrepreneur as well, right? It's just getting curious and learning how to solve problems and being a strong leader. And so leading into your new, you know, where you're at now, Particle 41, can you share a little bit about Particle 41 and the services that you do to help companies grow?
Yeah, so we're a full service software development consultancy. What I like to say is we help people from the boardroom to the code review. And so we have execution teams, but where I really like to start with clients is on CTO advisory. So you know, most leaders, most business leaders, they don't want to fall behind. And so I've been really approaching CTO advisory as a way of starting out with businesses to see, you know, what tool chains they already have in place, what is their customer experience, what are they working with, and how would they like to advance and stay current, relevant, and also take advantage of some of the greatest tools that have ever been made. Like, we can host things quickly, we can build software so quickly, and there's just so many great tools already out there that CTO advisory is something that I'm really focused on to help any business advance. But then, you know, we also, you know, getting into the code review, we have about 20 elite teams running, and we work on anything from VR headset experiences to your latest enterprise software package. So just really a diverse set of technology services. And at the end of the day, we just want to be the most dependable tech partner around. Like, we want you to know that what we say we do, we do. I just love partnering and helping people accelerate their business, make it stronger and more flexible.
So going back to the CTO advisory role, what are some of the most common challenges that your customers bring to you?
Well, I think clarity is the number one thing, getting clear. I want to make sure that anytime they spend with me, CTO advisory, that they're starting with an outcome and they're becoming more clear on either how to go get that outcome or so clarity. And so earlier you mentioned the OKR strategy. Used to be that we kind of, okay, well, what are the OKRs? What are the objectives, key results? How are you measuring your business? And what I found is they had general operating metrics, but what was happening is they were setting annual goals and then just kind of letting time run. And so I was inspired by the book 12 Week Year, where we're really seeing this trend. EOS has been doing this for a long time, this idea of thinking what you want for the year and then compressing it down to 90 days and then setting weekly targets inside of those 90 days that would roll up. So I'm seeing folks that are doing annual planning really kind of miss out because they let the first quarter burn without a lot of intention towards their goals. And then they might get kind of after it in second quarter. By mid-year, they realize they might not make it. They make a goal adjustment and try to burn like crazy through to the end of the year. If you've ever been in a performance-based culture that does that, Q4 is horrible. When you're supposed to be getting ready to go on vacation or go spend some time with your family and kind of decompress from the year, all hell's breaking loose at work. And so in order to break that up, I love this idea of saying, okay, well, this is our trajectory we want to be by the end of the year, but what do we need to get done in this 90 days? And then what does that mean for me this week that my team and myself have to get done? And then just having an energy and then setting that clear intention, I think really, really helps. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that. A lot of people are going to be talking more and more about time compression. And I think the annual planning, the annual goal setting planning thing is going to be out the door. I know a lot of successful businesses are taking a whole day once a quarter to nail down those targets. And those are the ones that are really, that they're hitting their targets.
No, I think it's great. We implemented EOS at Learned about 2.5-3 years ago, with rocks and scorecard and everything. And it's great because really like what you're saying is you just break it down and, you have your certain amount of goals that you set through the year. And you just go step by step, or everybody has their rocks, and it's just more fluent, and I think it's great. I was at this one of our clients a couple days ago, and they were just talking about how frustrated they were, Ben, about not having any cross functional clarity about what everybody else is doing in their organization. Do you see that a lot where they're like, we don't know what's going on in marketing. We don't know what's going on in IT. And because of it, it's caused this frustration and lack of, motivation inside the organization and even some, infighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's great. Great point that you bring up. I do think that whether you do OKRs or you do the EOS style, it really is making the goals of your departmental peers more visible. So most of the time your rocks and scorecards and stuff, like anybody can go see it. And we really should know how we're collaborating with each other and how we're going to intersect. What I find that I run into with CTO advisory is a lot of times the business's core competency is their core competency. It's their specific niche in the world and they know that language. But when it comes to digital, they may not have that digital language. And in CTO advisory, I can translate the marketing, the sales, the everything that the business is talking about I can help translate that to language that the vendor understands. And when the vendor is trying to set expectations in their sprints and, you know, agile points and this kind of, like, I can tell the business what that means. Okay. That means it's going to take 3 more months and it's going to cost you X amount more money. But they understand now the deadlines and the results and the pressures that you're under to deliver for your customers. So a lot of that calling balls and strikes and speaking the language of technical execution to folks that understand their industry is a big part of that. And I do think that that's a bit of a barrier in tech, is that we as software development and IT, we kind of have our own language, right?
It's 100%. Like a 100%.
Whole vocabulary, yeah.
And that's why I think a guy like you is a differentiator, right? Because you understand the tech, but you can speak to it in layman terms to help translate it into marketing and accounting and everything like that. Because it gets frustrating. Trust me, I've been on the other side of the fence where you get these tech guys talking to you, and they're talking to you in a language that I can't connect with, and you just don't understand.
Yeah, the English to English translation is super important, just so that we can all figure out the definitions. Language is super important in general. But also, I find a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of business owners are, you know, if you look at the DISC wheel, if you've ever done DISC assessments, they're these strong DI folks that are influential and direct. And they need to know the shortest version of the story, just personality-wise and just the way that they're geared to lead. Is way more direct and to the point. And oftentimes, as technologists, we want to explain the whole solution. We're solution-oriented as technologists, and they are more results-oriented. So we have to speak in a results language in order to connect with most business leaders. We can't talk in the language of the solution. And so that's what I spend a lot of my time doing, is saying, okay, with your plan and where you're trying to go, we got the solution, and this is what I need from you. I need this amount of money and this amount of time. I need you to be involved in this process. I need you to communicate your acceptance criteria and what results you continuously need. I need you to get a little detail oriented in the results that you expect from this process and from this investment, and then we'll go make the solution happen. And I find when we do that, magic happens.
Now, as that process takes place, does it happen right off the bat, or is it kind of have to iterate? Like, you have to go back to them and say, no, this is what we committed to, but how do you push that forward?
So I think that's really a leadership function, because the leadership needs to be a couple cycles ahead of the dev team or the technology team. The technology team has their iterative process. And if you can get a little bit ahead of them and keep them fed, then they will be super efficient. When they have to come up for air and say, well, did you mean this or did you mean that? Or okay, I've done my best based on your chicken scratches. And where we start iterating on working software, things really fall apart. So we have a design practice built into our firm. We love doing things in visuals. So architecture and design are a big part of being able to nail that up front. And really, if you're in any organization that's kind of building it to see, like, okay, I'm going to build this and see what you think, and I'm going to build a little more and see what you think, you're probably not in a place that will be successful. You'll just keep kind of spinning your wheels. And so trying to get the idea of what done is, this definition of done, up front in cheap ways, not that design is cheap, but it's cheaper than working software. So we try to advance the vision of the products and services well in advance of the actual building of it. So what goes in is what comes out, and expectations are managed.
And maybe I'm off on this, but in my research of you, you have, I think it's in your core values, your 3 Vs. It starts off with visibility, right? So does that kind of fall into what we're talking about here?
Yeah. So visibility is really a function of, with our tech teams, we want everybody to give, it's a very practical thing. In fact, we want everybody to tell the client what they've done that day, like making the day count. So visibility is like making sure plans and estimates and all of those things are understood. But just me as a person, if I'm working on an initiative, am I doing my best to communicate even down to the day, like what I've accomplished that day and what I plan to do tomorrow? And so we took a learning from the agile development process and this daily standup, and we just made it part of the, you know, part of the way that we breathe in the company. We use a tool called Status Hero, and every day just punch in a little like, hey, I worked on this particular item. I got about halfway done. I'm still working on this piece. And you just commit that, or you just, you know, let everybody know that. And then that way, we just don't ever want clients to say, hey, what is everybody working on? What's going on? We wanted to make the status part of a project just go away, because information is being pushed proactively. And I think having visibility as a core value also makes, you know, weekly status reports understood that they're not when the client asks for them, but they're just part of our process.
And are the other core values that go along with that velocity and vision?
Yeah. So velocity is really just like moving at the speed the market demands, you know, so we want to act.
Which is faster than ever now.
Right. It is. And a lot of times you beat your competition by being quick about it. But we have to have the process that supports that speed. And we want to make things future-proof. So vision really ties into, you know, are we building the system that is going to get you all the way to your destination? Not building a spaceship when you just want to get to, you know, Orlando. Not over-engineering, but the right solution for the stage of the company and what the customer is expressing is the need. So future-proofing it, but getting, you know, getting right measuring. We've recovered a lot of projects from teams that were just over-engineering independently of the business goals.
That's great. Well, Ben, we're coming up on our time here. What's one more thing you want to leave with our listeners?
So I love just in general working with people who are challenged by technology or have something amazing they're trying to achieve or making sure they don't fall behind. And so I am very, very approachable. On my website, particle41.com, my call to action, click to book a meeting. So I've made, even on my LinkedIn, book a meeting. So I would love to meet with folks, get to know them, and talk about what's challenging them or what's coming up for them, as we've discussed. And so I should be very available and super easy to approach. And yeah, I'd love to talk to people of your audience that are maybe even just trying to advance their career and want to talk more deeply about any topics that we've discussed here, or ask somebody who's done it a few times. And I love spending time with people. So.
No, well, you've been great today. I mean, looking back at what we talked about your journey being a serial entrepreneur, and you know the process of going through getting acquired and what that's like. I really enjoy talking about, you know, the power reframe, and then also the victim to creator framework and the work you're doing at Particle 41 around software development, as well as the CTO advisory role. So I think it's super fascinating, and keep up the great work, Ben. And beyond going to your website, where else would you like people to connect you with?
So I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn, and then my email is ben@particle41.com. And then we have a podcast, the Particle Accelerator podcast. So we'd love to see you anywhere under that brand that you'd like to experience us.
And I'm sure you heard of this on our time. Don't get you confused with the Olympic runner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think if you saw us side by side, there'd be no mistaking who's the fastest.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Ben, this has been great. And so for our listeners out there, if you enjoy this conversation today, please do me a favor, subscribe, like, and share. And until next time, everybody, please stay curious and keep learning. Have a good day, everybody. See ya. Bye.